Al Pacino has 88 minutes to live, which is 86 minutes too long. We saw 88 minutes, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Could you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am joined, as always, by the fantastic Jason Mantzoukas and the wonderful June Diane Raphael. How are you both?
Good.
Pretty good.
We are joined today by a very special guest. You know him from his podcast on the Nerdist Network called You Made It Weird. Please welcome Pete Holmes.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, everybody.
And you also have other things, too. He has a great comedy album. What's your comedy album called?
Oh, it's called Impregnated with Wonder. But I love how the punk rock element of how podcasts promote other podcasts. DIY and beautiful.
Our podcast could be your life.
Your podcast could be my life?
Yeah.
I don't understand what that means.
Don't overthink it, Pete.
I don't know. That didn't make...
That sentence actually makes more sense than anything in
this movie.
I was telling Zooks, I could talk about this movie. I can't believe the show's only 45 minutes. I feel like we have to pack in so much.
We should do it in 88 minutes.
Before you guys got here, Pete was like chomping at the bit.
I can't wait to talk about it. I just watched it this morning. It's actually the perfect way to watch it in daylight.
Yeah.
So you know you're wasting a beautiful day watching what might be the best, worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
So did you just wake up and turn it on? Or were there other
pretty
things
much?
Done? Okay, so it was like a real fresh.
I was
viewing.
Eating eggs, watching it, and like when it started, you guys start. I just want
to
know.
Please,
part of me, I was like, maybe they're wrong. Maybe this is going to be the best.
You know, I did think that.
I thought that a couple of times.
The opening scene, I was like, opening scene is like this
bold.
Like, murder scene. It's really well done and spooky. I was like, ooh, maybe this is good.
Wait a second, that's what I thought.
The opening scene is Asian girls in underwear.
Oh yeah.
Acting terribly.
Yes.
Acting
kitty,
terribly.
Kitty, kitty.
Yeah.
Kitty, kitty.
Why can't you feed the cat?
God damn, why don't you feed the cat?
An offensive portrayal of two young Asian women living together.
Yeah, well, I would say an erotic portrayal.
But I do have to say, they're supposed to be twins.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a big deal made of the fact
that
they're twins.
The moment is when they were like, they're twin, and she goes, she's my twin sister, and the cop was just like, oh, I was wondering if you just look alike or if you guys were.
You guys are twins.
I thought I was just being racist. You look exactly the same to me.
Do you think that's why they're so bad? Because they were like, oh, there's so many better Asian actresses, but we need a set of twins.
Yeah, you know what? I think you might be right. Like, they should have done it the David Fincher way in, like, Social Network, where they got the one actress to play both parts.
Both of them, yeah.
By the way, I want to point out one thing. We've watched a lot of bad movies on the show, and I'm beginning to see the trend with production company logos before the movie starts. And this one, when it started, it was... Family Room Entertainment.
Yes, I saw that too.
And like written in like Comic Sans.
Yes, it was terrible.
I was like, all right, we're in for a treat.
I love that you went there because I'll go one step back and say that the cover of this movie is a one-for-one rip-off of The Bourne Identity.
Yes.
It's the same cover.
It's the same cover. Pause the show. Googim. Safe Search on. You'll find it. I don't want you to see a picture of the
Safe Search
on. Yeah, because I don't want you to see the Asians that are being murdered.
Every cut in this opening sequence, the one Asian girl is in less and less clothing. She starts off fully dressed, then she's in a bra and pants.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Then she's in a bra and panties and a robe.
Yes.
And then she is murdered.
And they made no qualms about, like, you know, he's the murderer hoists the murder. I don't care if I ruin this movie.
No, that's the whole purpose, right?
So he hoists them.
Spoiler alert.
He puts them on like a carabiner of some kind, and like so their legs are above their head.
An elaborate pulley system.
And they let the Asian girl's ass go right in front of the camera. I was like, there's no way they're going to just let... There it is. We're seeing everything.
They were saying that he was like a rapist too, but I didn't understand how he would be raping them if they were hanging from the ceiling like a bat.
There was no rape.
There's no rape scene. You know what I mean? Okay. Like, it is just torture. Because later in the trial, when they're saying he's a rapist too, I was like, when did he have time to rape?
Yeah.
He really just hoisted that woman up and like cut her open.
Yeah. And stupidly. He cuts their calves and then goes, that's my thing.
Yeah.
And then he kind of, like, I thought they were going to reveal what he's doing. Is he fucking the wound or something? Like, he's just standing there.
We never see where that blood's coming from or what.
Oh, I just thought she had a period.
Autograph the table. Autograph the table. You make that joke, you autograph
that
the table.
That should definitely be a chance.
Now, we are talking about a scene. Excuse me.
Paul, are you getting emotional?
This scene is basically the opening of the movie. The movie doesn't even take place in this year. They try very hard to set up this is like 2007. Like they're playing music. Like they go, I can't believe Princess Di got killed. That's
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
They have to establish that it's 1997. How are we going to do that? I guess they could talk about Princess Di and we could show a picture in the newspaper.
Like that day.
Yeah.
It was 97.
It was 97. They lingered on the date for a couple of seconds.
Oh, yeah. That's so true. I thought that was going to be a big thing. I was like, oh, the killer's like a Princess Di fanatic.
They
really, like, it was no reason to set the tone because that scene, that part of the movie is probably like 4 minutes. Like, you don't really need to establish the 90s.
The movie is all false leads.
Yes.
Like, needless false leads.
And at the beginning, you don't know that. So you're like, okay, Princess Di, 97.
Yeah,
okay.
Asian girls are important.
These Asian girls must be important. Oh, no, wait, they're not? Okay, great, whatever.
45 minutes later, they were saying names. I wasn't even making an effort to think who they might be referring to.
I wrote a note at one point that said, like, this movie is all useless female names.
Guy names sounded completely ridiculous too. It was like Jeremy Goober and like Guy Lafarge.
Yes.
Like they were cartoon names.
Basically, too, everyone that's a suspect could be and has probably been in a CW show. Like they were all about the same age.
So, like, is that One Tree Hill? Who is that guy? Everyone, that's exactly right. You don't know where you know these actors from.
But they've all been on some sort of long soap opera. Yes,
it will bother you the whole film. Can I also say, this isn't out of order, it's more of an overall thing. Yes. 90% of the movie takes place on the phone.
Yes.
And when they're, it's like a foreign film in the sense that, like, if he has to fill out paperwork, they show him filling out paperwork.
Well, because the movie takes place in real time after the phone call.
Is that what it is?
Yes. The minute he gets the phone call. So basically what happens.
Wait, it just became a little bit cooler.
No, it's not, though. It's not.
That's why there were no cuts.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, not that there are cuts.
There are no time cuts.
Yeah.
Although there are... They cheats like hugely. He's giant in 88 minutes. He's able to traverse the city back
multiple times,
driving a taxi cab. Why does he drive a taxi cab?
I wanted to get to that.
Why does that happen? He can't get a taxi cab and be like, "Take me here." He's like, "I'm gonna drive $100."
Well, I think the idea was,
how do I move the seat forward? I'm too short. I can't reach the pedals.
The idea was that he wanted to drive faster than
the taxi cab. Fucking dumb.
But he wasn't driving that much faster than a cab driver.
At what point?
He asked the guy to get out so they could have a private conversation.
He gave
him another $20 and was like, give us a moment.
He's hemorrhaging cash. He's hemorrhaging cash to this cab driver. Who is sitting in the back seat? There's so many shots where Pacino is like intensely looking through papers. They're talking on the phone, and in the shot is a dirty cab driver
in the seat
behind him.
Sort of out of focus.
Just sort of like, kind of like, what's up, guys?
I kept thinking about the guy's agent, like Phil.
You got a great scene.
All with Pacino. It's with Pacino.
You're working for 2 weeks.
It's just like Collateral. You're the Jamie Foxx character in Collateral.
Do I have a postcard?
If you have not seen the movie, you will not have no idea what we're talking about. Basically, these girls are murdered. These Asian girls are murdered. Oh. Al Pacino testifies at their trial with a little prince mustache.
Yes.
And then the movie cuts nine years later.
That female lawyer delivered her dialogue.
She's schmacting up a storm.
As if she was auditioning for... Real Housewives.
It was insane. It was mental.
This movie is so misogynistic from the beginning to end. The portrayals of women
so erogenistic.
So upsetting.
It's true. That lawyer's teeth, by the way, were goddamn huge.
Yes.
I watched the rest of the film on her teeth. IMAX. They were huge, and it looked like the first fucking take. That's the first time.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm watching the Asians
Your Honor,
get murdered.
Yeah. Objection.
Yeah. Yeah.
It did look like the first take. Like, just get this one out of your system.
That's
like,
when it hit me that
worst
it might,
instinct.
And
it
John might be terrible.
And John Avnet was like, I feel like I should ask her to come down like 90%. fuck it. Check the gate. Moving on.
Moving on.
She was doing like a bad that. Dennis Miller, like, Your Honor, my client was flippity-jappity just as soon as Oedipus finished off his second burrito. Like, what the fuck did you just say? And the judge, you can tell her to shut the fuck up. And he's just like, I'll allow it.
So basically, Al Pacino testifies, puts this guy away, and you're fine. We cut to 9 years later. Al Pacino wakes up in a bed with this woman who's doing naked yoga.
And brushing
naked,
her teeth.
And brushing her
in
teeth.
In a way that looks like she's fucking giving a Sonic Arrow blowjob.
Yes, exactly. She's got it in her mouth and her leg is up. It's
you know, like girls do.
You're right.
It's a misogynistic movie. Was that supposed to be like, this guy's got it made?
What? Everyone wants to fuck Al Pacino.
Everybody.
In this movie.
That's the craziest thing about
in
this movie.
Like, he's like the hottest guy
of
all time.
Indiana Jones in this movie.
And the women they cast though are towering over him.
Molly Ringwald.
There are police dogs that are taller than him in this movie.
Al Pacino in this movie isn't tan. He's mahogany. Like, he's an odd color.
His wig is out of control.
Is that a wig?
Oh, right? Yes, that's
a
wig.
It's a pompadour that is lost. It's like Bruno Mars' pompadour got a pompadour.
Yeah.
Like, it's like it's crazy.
It's as if he's practicing in this movie for his Phil Spector role.
It is huge. It does add inches.
If you're wondering what that banging is, it's Pete Holmes smashing the table every time he's enjoying himself.
I'm delighted and I refuse to
I just don't want people at home to be like, why don't they answer the door?
I was going to do it there, but I didn't.
So Al Pacino is a fuck machine.
Yes.
And
he's a forensic scientist is what he is.
Who is super rich.
He's not. I just want to make sure people understand. He's not a policeman.
And he's so almost a policeman.
It's like CSI. It's like CSI when you think about it. Like, those guys, they're not police.
Yes.
They are forensic scientists.
Yes.
But he does run, and he's also a professor.
Yes.
But he also runs a firm that
called like
does,
the John Abrams
that
firm?
Does question mark
oh
anyone?
My God,
yeah.
Forensic investigations, I assume.
I can't.
But he's like the.
I have no idea.
The leading. He's like the leading forensic investigator until this day. The movie takes place on this day where everyone turns on him. Like, he's the hero of the world, and then all of a sudden they're like,
what is this, shit on Al Day?
Yeah.
I can't even think of the character's name. Like,
Jack Graham.
How you doing?
Well, first of all, the woman comes back. The woman who he saved, the one of the Asian women, has come back.
He kisses her twice.
Twice!
Tenderly. Tenderly.
And whispers.
You did a good job.
He holds a lot of women's faces in this movie. Like, puts a hand to
Do you know what I think it is? Do you know what I think it is? He has to grab onto something to pull himself up. He has to grab onto something.
He's using her face as an apple box.
Yeah, like, pulling up. Then
you can I get a half
good.
Apple, girl?
You did good.
He kisses her twice. That was another moment where I was like, Jesus Christ, I think this movie's going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Have we gotten to the cookie yet?
Well, that's the cookie.
We get to the cookie.
The Asian woman brings him a plate of cookies that say, let's come. Like,
can I interject?
Yes,
not fortune cookies. I just want everyone to know.
It should have been.
Just to make
I made
it one
you some
step
homemade
worse.
Fortune cookies.
She makes him. She makes him cookies. They are basically celebrating that the murderer is going to be put to death that day.
Yes.
Everybody's partying.
The murderer who, as the movie goes, not to tip it early, they just keep overstating that there's no evidence that this guy did it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, 9 years later, they're mad at Al Pacino going, hey, wait a second, maybe you were wrong.
Yeah.
9 years later, come on, guys. And so he gets these cookies, he goes in to be interviewed, which then opens up to my favorite scene of the movie, is Al Pacino serving people cookies and milk.
In
a boardroom.
And you think it's going to pay off?
I still
thought it was going to pay off.
No payoff.
No, it's going to be like, there's going to be a thing, like the way he eats the cookie, he dunks the cookie, there's a joke about the cookie coming.
At one point, Jill Hennessy, what's her name?
No, it's Amy.
Amy Brennan. And comes out, who plays his assistant, comes out and says, milkmaid.
A real line in a movie. Not
milkmaid.
Improvised.
He's like, to her, my favorite line was, he says to her, how come we never got married? And she goes, well, because
I'm gay and you're
a commitment phobe.
Yeah.
She goes, I'm a lesbian.
Oh,
she goes, I'm a lesbian, which is even worse.
Yeah.
She goes,
are you sure?
That's why it could have worked.
Oh, my God.
It goes, that's why we're perfect.
Yeah.
That's why.
That's
Wait, can someone explain to me though? So this
milkmaid.
guy, so So this guy hey, was guys, put away.
Is it cool if I don't say milkmaid?
Just to, like, Let's just get one. Not, let's just get one for safety.
Amy, I promise we're not going to use it. Amy, I promise we're not going to use it. Just give me one.
And you're not going to use the whole take of me lingering way too long, realizing she came in at a bad moment. That's like a 45-second yeah. shot of her being like, whoops. Cuts to Al, cuts back to her still going, whoops. And then she moonwalks out of the goddamn room. Thanks for the cookies.
Can someone explain to me what this guy was, like, what evidence there was to put him away 9 years ago?
Never.
Basically, they're treating it like...
Eyewitness by Jeannie
basically,
Tate.
They're basically treating it like the fact that Al Pacino testified as a forensic... investigator yeah. put this guy away. Like, that's the whole thing.
But there was no DNA.
No DNA.
Okay, that's what
no
I wanted
eyewitness.
To know.
Yes. And well, the eyewitness there was an Asian. The worst kind of eyewitness.
Oh, God. No, the eyewitness. Oh, boy. The eyewitness.
Was
the eyewitness repeatedly says that she didn't see anything in the beginning. Remember that?
She did, and we didn't either.
But then we don't know...
Like, no one saw what happened.
Kitty saw.
Yeah.
Kitty saw. And the kitty. Yeah, well, the kitty. So, basically, then, you know, so he kind of, Al Pacino's never fazed. He's never really fazed by anything.
I'm so glad you said that. I kept waiting. Like, he gets a phone call that's like, you have 88 minutes. This is it. He's like, no problem. Call me later.
Yeah, here's it.
And then he starts teaching a class.
Yes, he taught a class.
Take a listen to the phone call, because it's pretty great to see this, the tenor of Al Pacino. Here we go.
Unfazed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello.
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 You have 88 minutes to live.
What?
You know how long 88 minutes can be, don't you? That's 11:45 a.m.
Who's this?
TikTok.
Who the hell is this? Hey. What are you saying?
What are you saying?
And then that's it. Then he just looks around the quad as if that person was standing in the quad with him.
I'm sorry, I'm jumping out of order, but there's a goddamn motorcycle man.
It's what's his name from True Blood.
Stephen Moyer.
Stephen Moyer, who winds up having one line in the movie that is said through a closed door.
That's right.
Oh my God.
Before he is subsequently shot.
He couldn't be more suspicious. Suspicious things are happening to Al Pacino, and he investigates everyone but that guy.
He keeps seeing him in the apartment.
He saw him at the quad, and he sees him again in the lecture hall.
He sees him in the quad.
No,
goes,
then he sees
who
him
is that guy
afterwards. He sees him after the class too, and that's where he's on the phone. And he goes, "Who is that guy? Who is that guy? The guy is a murderer."
Yeah.
But another false lead that is so ham-fisted and nothing.
Basically, Al Pacino's seen this guy now three times, and he just goes, "Who is this guy?" And then goes back to his conference anyway. So getting those phone conversations.
But he meets a sketchy a campus security guy that he has checked out.
Yeah.
And he questions one of his students. He's like, "Oh, give me a phone, you piece of shit."
By the way, he goes, "Give me a phone."
There is
a stranger in the classroom,
in a goddamn leather jacket, lurking
in shadows,
and scowling at you.
Whose name is Guy Lafarge,
and he.
By the way, you saw him outside of his apartment.
Yes.
Oh, no, outside of the girl's apartment.
The hooker's apartment.
Outside of the escort's apartment.
And in a bad flashback, he realizes that everyone in the movie was at that bar last night.
Yes,
everyone.
Oh, my God, that flashback made me furious. Because he has a flashback. Okay, we're jumping so far ahead now. But he has a flashback where he realizes that everybody was in the bar behind him.
Mm-hmm.
In the flashback, he can see... He has perspective on things that are happening behind him.
He's a forensic psychologist. He couldn't examine his own flashback.
The flashback goes to Pacino kissing the girl. Then the camera moves off of them so you can see the rest of the people in the bar who are behind him. And he has an epiphany as if to say, like, "Oh, now I remember. Now I remember all those things that there's no physical way I could have seen last night because I had my back to all these people."
God. And just to draw that thing, everyone wants to fuck him in that bar that night.
Oh my God.
Everyone wants to fuck him.
And it seems to me that his entire office and his entire class is taught on the case of this guy who doesn't seem that impressive as a killer.
No.
It's like he killed two women. Like, why would this mean?
He killed a whole bunch of women.
Oh, he killed the guys.
Remember in the phone call where he lists all the names off?
Okay.
So there's a whole bunch of women.
Other wacky names?
Yeah.
Judy Watto. Why don't you tell us where the body of
all the characters are cut like Star Trek, Star Wars characters, like Watto, the guy who works with me.
Well, what's the guy's real name?
Boba Fett.
Guy LaForge.
He sounds like a Disney villain.
Oh my god, I looked it up at one point. Hold on.
Guy LaForge.
You gotta be kidding me,
I did feel like the movie was like an Al Pacino roller coaster because you were waiting for it. You're like, oh, when is he gonna lose his shit?
He never does.
You want him to so bad.
He's high register Pacino, which you just heard, who is this? I want him to be like, listen to me, you cocksucker. But it never went there.
What is this? Who are you?
Yeah, it was always.
Well, I think
calm.
He was. He was trying to pace himself for those 88 minutes.
These are just some of the character names. Guy LaForge. Jeremy Goober. Johnny DeFranco.
Wait, who is Johnny DeFranco? Oh, this campus security guy.
DeFranco. Okay.
JT Riker.
Wait, I'm sorry. Johnny, a name that sounds like Ani. DeFranco.
JT Riker. Joanie Cates. Oh, they're not twins, by the way, guys.
They're not twins.
Nope.
Racist.
Anyway.
Well, I guess that really blows. I guess he hired them for their great acting then.
This shit is crazy.
Well, Pacino and so basically he has 88 minutes to live. He just seems unfazed by that.
Yep.
And to the point where he's like, I gotta get my files out.
Just
find out who's on the top list of people who want to kill me.
And his other guesses are, is it you? anybody.
Everybody.
Everybody
within his peripheral vision. It's all the people that are right there. It's like Lily Sobieski.
Molly Ringwald,
yeah. and the guy from the OC, Ben McKenzie.
And when they did that push in on all their faces, I was like, is this a joke? It's obviously not someone, is it? Yeah. Could it be?
I instantly was like, oh, it's all of them.
I didn't think it was gonna be all
looked at him with fuck me eyes.
Yeah, including the OC kid.
Yeah, everybody was looking at him like
including Indiana Jones.
Including
Guy LaFarge.
Yeah, Guy LaFarge was up for it.
I just want you guys to know that the guy who wrote this movie also wrote a lot of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Oh.
Hollow Men, and then K-9, the Jim Belushi dog movie.
Oh my god. Yes.
And then a sequel to Time Cop called Time Cop Berlin Decision.
I thought you were gonna say the sequel to K-9 K-10.
That would be amazing.
I want to yell more about this movie. Just bring up anything.
Well, there was a sequence that really made me crazy, which was they all have to leave the university because there's a bomb scare. He goes down to his car to get out of there. Lily, what's her
Sobieski.
Last name? Sobieski.
Poor man's Helen Hunt.
He finds
Baby Helen Hunt.
He finds Baby Helen Hunt in a stairwell, and she's saying that she's just been stabbed or...
Or attacked.
She's just been slapped around or something.
Yeah. He spends, I think, 2 minutes of screen time running around looking for a guy who has blood on his hands.
And they remember one of them's a woman? One of the cars that he stopped is a woman?
Oh, yes.
And then
this is my favorite part.
Let me see your hands.
Yeah, because she said that she bit their, or they cut their hand.
I bit their hand.
And then basically Al Pacino stopping everyone in the parking lot. Let me see your hands.
Yeah.
I want that as my ringtone.
Let me see your hands.
But looking back at it all, because now, at the end of the movie, we find out that she is the copycat.
Spoiler alert.
She's the Seattle
Slayer. Looking terrible, by the way. I could talk about that scene for about an hour.
Garbage.
She looked like pure garbage.
They found
the one angle to make her look just like a fucking moon pie.
Yeah.
It looked terrible. And can I just jump ahead to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
She effortlessly is repelling the girl.
Yes.
And I have
a big problem with this.
It took two men to pull her up, but Lily could do it with one hand.
Well, she has psycho strength.
Yes. Lily Sobieski at the end is revealed to be the murderer and has her next victim hanging above a like auditorium or some big thing, and is holding it in one hand.
Yes.
And is able to like start tape recorders and do whatever she wants to do.
She makes a phone call.
She's so easy.
She lets the woman fall 10 feet, then effortlessly pulls her back up.
And then all of a sudden, like when the action scene happens, like the woman drops, and Al Pacino's like, ugh! And then like Al Pacino's buddy, a cop, they both are like, ugh!
Just, like, they're trying to pull her back up, and now it's impossible, guys.
It's impossible. But that is, like we said, that is at
and
the end.
Can I please, one more thing about that? Was she blind? I don't know
who?
What's going
on.
No,
what?
No one else was confused. I know she wasn't really blind, but there's a moment. Let me explain. Look,
what are you talking about?
Well, get ready for
something
weird.
I'm so excited.
Al Pacino comes in, and Lili Sobieski, the movie's so bad, I would have believed anything.
Yeah.
And for a brief moment, I'm being vulnerable right now. I thought that Lili Sobieski, another twist, was that she was blind. Listen, I will play it for you right now, and you'll know what I'm talking about. Al Pacino comes in, and he has a gun drawn.
Yes.
And she's got that weird vacant face, like she's not looking at anything. She's just kind of like soft focus.
Yeah. And she says, is that a gun?
And she goes, is that a gun? Do you have a gun? And he goes, yes, I have a gun. And then she goes, put it down. And then he's like, I've put it down. And slide it over to me. And then he tries to slide it just a little bit. And I was like, because she's blind.
Oh, and now I'm remembering, actually, there's another point in that scene where he keeps on saying a number of times, what if I were to tell you there was an FBI agent pointing a gun to your head?
Like, I was like, oh, my God. I played it back in my mind. I was like, we didn't ever see her reading or anything.
You know what? She could have been blind. She could have been blind.
We never saw that.
That's in the DVD extras.
Well, there clearly were things in this movie that were done all in post. And the one thing that I want to bring my attention to is there's a scene in the car with the girl, the redhead.
Kim Cummings.
And she's with Al Pacino.
Best porn name of a real character in an ordinary movie.
Most unnecessary sweater removal goes to...
Oh, my God.
Well, she obviously... She
clearly
wants to fuck him, too.
Oh, my God. She is, like, gunning for Pacino.
Big time. Big time.
And, like, he's over in his amazing loft, which, by the way, when he enters into the loft, the security guard, like, he has a thing, like, how'd you know my name?
Yeah.
You're the security guard who works in this fucking building!
And then Kim and the security guard share a look that is, like, real weird.
I'm remembering that differently. It's a temp guy. He goes, where's Earl?
Yeah.
But, you know, you're right that there's something fucked up happening. He goes, where's Earl? And he goes, oh, I'm not the... He might as well just go, I'm not the murderer.
I'm suspect as well.
That also happened when Molly Ringwald is in the parking garage. He's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, I'm just coming here to get my car where I always leave it. I'm not the murderer. Like, yeah. She might as well just say that.
But I feel like everyone in this movie was acting like everyone should say their line and then twirl their mustache.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, maybe, maybe, maybe. Yeah. Everyone's a maybe.
So this guy isn't Earl. The door guy isn't Earl. And he goes, Doctor, what's his name? Doctor
Graham.
Dr. Graham.
He goes, Dr. Graham, there's a package for you. And then he goes, okay. And then he goes, how did you know my name? And he goes, I didn't. It was a question. So let me get this straight. Everyone that comes in, you're going, Dr. Graham. And if you say yes, you get the package?
Yeah.
What kind of a door guy are you? This is why you're a goddamn temp and not a real door guy.
But maybe the killer went in and said, when you see a very short man with a crazy beard and very tan skin come
in, it's going to look a child to you or I. It's a Lord of the Rings reference.
He probably, his head will not go past your desk.
If you see troll hair walking by your desk.
If you see a man that belongs atop a pencil, give him this. There were so many eerie shots of that door guy that I thought for sure, still investing and committing to the movie. I was like, surely this man is important.
A solid 90% of this movie is Al Pacino answering and talking to it on a cell phone.
This movie should just be called telephone calls.
He's always like,
phone calls.
Yeah.
You know
what?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And there's always call waiting and stuff. He's like, let me conference you in.
So much so.
He's getting
The bad guy is able to just hijack phone calls.
That's it.
He's on the phone at one point with whoever he's on the phone with, and then the bad guy's like, did you get my package or whatever?
No,
you can't do that.
There's no rule. Like, he just jumped in. I mean, and so basically.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
About the door guy is, you know what this movie's like? It's like life. Because you keep meeting people that don't have anything to do with anything. Yeah. It's like, hi, I'm Ben. I'm like, you don't have anything to do with my story.
Why do you have a full name? I can't deal with this.
But he goes, they do that. Everyone has a full name.
What about Sarah Jacobs? What about Bethany Monroe?
This movie.
movie is.
Who are all these people? Why does everybody have full names? There's a girl who literally walks by and goes, "Hi, Dr. Graham," and he goes, "Hi, Lauren." And it's like, that's the sum total of her acting performance. There's "Hi, Lauren."
But you're
weak. Who? Why do we care about Lauren? Is she a suspect?
I feel like Al Pacino's like, "I got a name, everybody. I'm a very famous guy in this campus." But that even the
Hey, Al, could you stop making up names for the day players?
Hello, Teresha McDonald. Nice to meet you. How's your yogurt shop? I hope it's doing well. I enjoy that yogurt very much. I'll see you tomorrow. I only do yogurt Mondays and Wednesdays. Goodbye.
Trisha McDonald.
So much information, and it's flushed immediately. Yeah. If you watch this movie, and I hope you do, pay no attention. Pay no attention. You'll learn all these people. The doorman, I do want to point this out. I don't know how to say it, but like, picture the doorman putting his like face against the wall and kind of just like, he also does that thing. He's like, all right. He's just staring at him like with his face.
Wait, the wall?
He kind of rounds that corner when Al Pacino's getting into the elevator.
Right.
And he's kind of like just staring at him. Super creepy.
And he's got like a scar on his neck. And I was like,
And a weird eye.
He's a killer. But everybody's the killer.
Why was Kim giving him that crazy look?
Who knows?
And why did he? They used the take where he explained that somebody called and he uses the flashlight.
Oh, yes,
the phone. He's like, "Yeah, somebody called for you." And he holds up the flashlight. And Al, he did that in a scene with Al Pacino.
Hey, Mike, I like the choice you're making just to tell Pacino somebody called for him. But, like, maybe he's not going to get what a call is. So could you just hold up, I don't know, hold up your flashlight to your ear to insinuate that it's a phone?
I actually think that's the only guy in the movie that was aware that it was like a comedy. He was like, "I'm going to do it funny. I'm going to do a funny take."
Well, I almost forgot about my favorite scene, which is, I guess there's like smoke coming through the building, and they have to escape. And then Al Pacino does this thing where he jumps in front of a fire truck for no reason, just to roll out of the way of it.
Alone in my apartment, daylight, laughed for about
that
a minute.
That made me really sad because I felt like that was totally added in because Al Pacino is like, you know, I want to look like
an action hero.
That really bummed me out.
I love Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise, great runner.
Yeah.
Al Pacino, not a good runner.
No. Yeah.
Every time he runs, he looks like he's holding two eggs in his hand.
And it was
that
so sad
because
it wasn't like he was doing anything heroic or trying to help anyone. He just got in the way of a truck.
A fire truck and just kind of rolled out of the way of it.
And then his car blows up. Spoiler, his car blows up, and we all knew it was going to blow up. But then I was like, the whole point is that they're going to kill him at a specific time.
Yes.
But they rigged his car to blow up.
Just so they could get him early?
What if they did get him? It would have been like, well, fuck, I had this whole finale where I'm wearing the Catwoman suit and I'm baby Helen Hunt.
But there's no, like...
And why was that apartment on fire?
Why did anything happen?
I think to drive them out of the apartment. I think to get them out of the apartment.
Well, it was around that moment that I realized this movie wasn't 34 blocks or whatever.
Oh, yeah, right.
I thought it was going to be like that. I was like, why isn't this in New York?
34 blocks would be another one we should do. I'm sure that's just equally bad.
This movie's priceless.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is the point where he hijacks the cab.
But before that, at
this point in the movie, though, you want him to just say, "Get out of the cab! We're going here."
Yeah.
I am going to die. He's negotiating. He's like, "How you doing?"
I'll give you $100 if you let me take your cab.
I can drive your cab. You can stay in it.
What is your full name?
What is your wife's name?
What's her maiden name?
It's like a memory. The whole movie's a memory game at the end. Oh, wait. Did we forget about the...
Where did you get
the interview on TV?
Oh, yes. That's one of the things I was going to say.
Did we jump that?
Yeah, because that happened in the apartment.
The bad guy...
He conferences Mike Ditka. He calls Mike Ditka.
Wait, what?
The guy with the slick hair. He looks like Ditka.
The guy that he wronged for...
Neil McDonough. Neil McDonough's on like CNN... MSNBC, rather.
Yes.
Being interviewed
with Deirdre McConnell.
I still don't get it. He's like, "It's being simulcast. Just set up."
He's like,
7:30.
Call MSNBC and get me on with this guy.
What does that even mean?
And so he calls in. He has minutes to live, but has time to call MSNBC to talk to Neil McDonough and like try and he's like, I'm gonna mess with his head.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm gonna get him.
I'm gonna get him to come out of his shell.
And that's probably the best Pacino of it.
Yeah.
Like in the movie where it's like, Tell me about Dahmer.
Dahmer did it. You fucking cocksucker.
And then they have this argument where like, oh, by the way, this movie is obsessed with TiVo.
Yeah.
You hear that. It's always
that was added in post. Because they realized later, they were like, he just pauses the television? Isn't it 1990? Well, oh, it's 2000.
And then also, he, in the middle of the interview, the guy gets a stay of execution, and then they just stop the interview. Like, the interview's over. Like, okay, like, it's just like, they just go away from it. They're in the middle of this heated exchange.
Yeah. And Pacino just, like, Pacino just pushes pause and hangs up.
Yep. Yeah. And then he called into CNN or whatever, MSNBC. He calls in. It's not enough that he's having a conversation with the guy that's on his TV. We got the fucking cop partner conferenced in so he can hear it too.
I kept wanting to be like,
simulcast 7:50 a.m.
Why would anyone care?
He must be on a delay.
Yes.
There's no way he can be in real time on the TV and listening to the TV. It would literally be a delay, and they would be like, please turn your TV off.
Yeah.
Can go into another room.
And the other thing was, too.
Like, are you watching this while you're doing it? What the fuck?
And the picture of him that they use on the TV when he's called in is like a jack-off shot.
Yeah.
It's almost like, hey, Jack, right here. And he's like, huh?
He looks like he's been frightened by a ghost.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that
he's unaware that his photo's being taken in that photo. It's just like,
his cop buddy is listening, and the cop buddy knows that he has 88 minutes to live, and the guy's like, the killer's like, what if you only had minutes to live?
Yeah.
Like, clearly saying, like, he's in on it. And then the cop buddy's like, doesn't trust him 2 seconds after that. It's like, you're lying.
Can I say something about the film overall? Is it's like, I don't, will this make sense? I don't know. This movie was so clearly written by one person. What I mean by that is every character is the same. They all just kind of, they talk the same. Yeah. Everything is just in service of the story.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that I wrote down that's funny to round this thought out. We didn't talk about how he breaks his cell phone for no reason.
Right.
There's a scene where he breaks
his
cell phone.
And then takes kids.
And you have to watch American Treasure Al Pacino pretend to drop his cell phone in the stairwell.
Yeah.
And it's broken in a way that only could be done with like a bullet.
Yeah.
And he just dropped it on the ground the way we do.
Yeah, he gingerly dropped it.
And he kind of gives it a little voice.
Yeah. He bobbles it. He's kind of like, oh.
Before the scene, he's like, what if I maybe do like a bobble?
John, get over here. John, I had an idea. What if I bobble the phone?
I'm looking at the phone. I'm looking at the way it's broken, right? And I don't... I can't do it.
You're great. I love that, Al Pacino.
I don't think it would be realistic if I don't bobble it. So anyway... No reason. He breaks the cell phone. And you're like, oh, that's kind of interesting because now he doesn't have any contact with the killer. And the whole premise of the movie is that he's going to be reminded how many minutes. And then
he just
gets another phone.
Yeah. He gets Kim's phone.
And he gets all his calls forwarded to that phone. Yeah. Why were we? Why were we forced to watch that?
What's the point?
What is the point of that?
But my favorite moment is at the end when he kills Lily Sobieski. He saves the day. Everything's going good. And the killer calls him on the phone. Thinking
that
he's Lily Sobieski. Yes. And then he has like a big speech to him. He's like, you messed up.
And he's holding the phone apart from his head.
Yes.
Interesting choice.
Yeah.
And then he goes, he says, 12 hours to live. TikTok. And then he just throws the phone.
I thought the phone. Okay, I'm the same guy that thought Lily might be blind, but I thought the phone was going to explode.
His backup plan was an exploding phone.
Oh yeah, 9.
And then the whole thing was like when he goes up to confront Lily Sobieski, she makes him confess.
Yeah.
Now,
he confesses immediately.
He confesses immediately, but I don't understand as a viewer if he did coach those people, if he did hide evidence, because at the end of the movie, he kind of takes that tape and puts it in his pocket. Like,
guys, what was she gonna do with that tape?
I don't know.
She's a murderer at this point. Yeah. She's not gonna like go and now introduce it as evidence, right?
It doesn't make any fucking sense.
I guess every part of the movie too, because there's a couple moments where like the Molly Ringwald clone calls him up and she's like, "I did it. I'm behind the whole thing." You're like, "Oh, okay, I buy it."
No, but that's because Lily Sobieski has a gun to their head.
Right. But you don't know it at that point. So, but even at that point, you're like, okay, I guess.
That
like,
always seemed really obvious to me, though. I know we could see her and she was sweating and stuff, but he would always buy it. He'd be like, hey, meet me in your apartment. It's me. I've been setting you up. It's me. And, and he's like, are you... He keeps getting those calls.
Well, the whole tape that sets off the whole day is a woman going like, Jack Graham totally lied and he did all this bad stuff. Did I say everything you wanted me to say now?
Yes.
Don't hurt me.
Yes.
And it's like, all right, this tape implicates you. It's like... Yes. She was clearly under fucking duress.
Yes.
She said it on the tape.
She mispronounced one of the words.
Yes.
She got nervous for the reading.
Why would you believe someone who's like you then watch being murdered for over an hour?
Yes.
Wait, but I have a question. I guess Lily Sobieski got the semen from the hooker to place in those bodies?
Yeah, because she was made out with the hooker. Remember, she kissed the hooker?
Am I the only one that was... Oh, wow. I stopped trying at that point. Also, in that scene where they were like, they found your semen in her vagina, I was like, Val, fucking taking some risks.
Yeah,
blowing loads right in the cave, right up there.
That's what I thought. I was like, this is a girl he met at the
wrap
bar last night.
Wrap it up, buddy. Wrap it up.
Raw dogging it, Regina.
I'm Jack Graham. Forensic science. I don't use condoms.
That's the absurd thing about this movie.
A man who makes his living swabbing up semen just blows
that's probably
it
why he was. That's probably why he was so shocked to find out she was an escort. Wait a minute, what? I barebacked that girl.
That's why he was so upset.
He's got to go in.
Hang on. I thought she was a law student. I wouldn't have raw-dogged her if I knew she was an escort.
He spent 15 minutes going to a clinic to get tested in the movie.
That explains this burning I've got.
Uh-oh, I guess I do have 88 minutes to live.
He's going to fucking die from an STD. We have a new segment that we would like to do here. This is a segment called Say What? And basically, we're just going to just take a piece of dialogue. If you guys remember this, you know, Pete, you should actually do it because you actually do a good Al Pacino. You read the Jack parts.
Just take a second to read it over.
And this is one of my...
Shelley.
All right, here we go.
Shelley, there's been a break in my place. In my most secure area. Did you ever give anyone clearance to go into my secure files?
Jack, what are you saying?
Did you ever let an unauthorized person into...
I can't read it! This is a real line!
Did you ever let an unauthorized person into my secure files area?
That's a line that American treasure Al Pacino memorized and delivered multiple takes.
Or there was a better line that he forgot and just made that one up.
Hold on, my let most me secure. Give me the
I
end
gotta
of
do
that.
It again.
Give me the end of that piece.
Did you ever let an unauthorized person into my secure files area?
Wait, no, you missed one of the words.
I did? I gotta get it right. Did you ever let an unauthorized person into my secure files area?
No. Not ever. To anyone. Ever.
That's a real lie. Al
These
heard
things
that.
Happen.
That's like the most dirty, my most secret, secure area.
My secure files area?
That woman.
Where did the man touch you? Where did the man touch you? In my most secure files area.
Can I? I know you're an escort, but can I come in your most secure files area?
Oh, my. Her name is Shelley, too. And there was actually a heartbreaking moment because Glengarry Glen Ross is one of my favorite movies of all time. And Jack Lemmon's name is Shelley. So there's a moment where Al Pacino goes, Shelley. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
So great.
She also is, she's De Niro's girlfriend in Heat.
Really?
Which is like the other Pacino crazy, you know, insane. Those two face off in the diner, blah, blah, blah. But Amy Brenneman, like...
One of my favorite Amy Brenneman moments, though, is when he calls her. All of their scenes pretty much are over phone calls. But he calls her to say, call the cell phone company and find out who just called me. And he's like, trace the call. Just find out.
Yeah.
And she goes, okay. She hangs up and writes something on a post-it.
She wrote trace. I totally noticed. She's going to forget to do what he just asked her to do.
Right now.
There were a couple things. Doing when you have a chance. It's like, do this immediately.
And she was like, if you told me what was going on, I could help more. No, fucking do the trace. Yeah. Get the fuck out of my goddamn face.
Obviously, we had some issues with the movie. But there are some people who really love it. I'm going to visit some Amazon.com reviews for a second opinion. Warren Christensen writes, Al Pacino is not disappointing. It's worth twice whatever you pay for it. 5 stars. Milton K. Gonzalez.
We should sell that guy copies of this movie for twice what they're worth.
That was my first impulse, was to go on Facebook, type in 88 minutes, and see who had it as their favorite movie.
Oh, there's a lot of 5-star reviews. Milton K. Gonzalez's is my favorite, though.
One of them.
Well-acted movie with a real definition of the story. Al Pacino is very good actor for this movie because when you see this film, is like you are living it.
Wow.
He's right about
true.
That.
Yeah, that's true.
I kind of wish I had known that real-time 88-minute thing because it really did. I couldn't quite put my finger on what was so fucked up about it.
We haven't even gotten into what the significance of the 88 minutes.
The dead sister.
Kate Graham.
He listens to that tape, by the way. He gets a fucking serial killer, sends him a tape recorder. He's got Molly Ringwald in there removing sweaters for no reason.
And posing and on the stairs.
Yes, yeah. And he just starts listening to it casually. He's like, I'm sure this is disturbing. It's my sister.
Well, first he checks
my
12-year-old it for chemicals. First he checks it for chemicals.
Yeah.
And then there aren't any.
Why was
useless?
Why? That was in there. He was like, I have one of these things that they use at the TSA.
It
why?
He scans it, it's clean.
He opens it.
Not a bomb. He goes, not a bomb.
And the screen was a gas mask, and it goes, scanning. Safe. Why? It's so bad. You have to watch it.
He then has multiple, he has so many flashbacks in this movie.
Yeah.
He flashes back to the bar again. He flashes back to his dead sister flying a kite.
Yes.
He is a man who I believe might be having some sort of aneurysm. All he does is have continuous flashbacks.
That scene where he's driving the first time you see his sister riding on the bike, there's already too much happening, and they introduce the sister being dead, and she was murdered over 88
minutes. Well, the best moment, too, is when Amy Brenneman does trace the call, she finds out that it's a cell phone that you can buy at a convenience store, but it was registered to the name Kate Graham, and
then she says,
I'm sure this is a coincidence.
Yes.
Probably not.
In your line of work, there should not be coincidence.
When there are people that are killing you all the time, there's no coincidence. Yeah,
she's
a bad secretary. I don't even know if she's a secretary or his number two.
That was one of those lines where you could tell the movie is a little dated because she was like, it's one of those cell phones that you can buy and just load with minutes.
Yeah.
A prepaid cell phone, I think they call it. But it was registered to someone's name.
Yeah. That's the point of a prepaid cell phone.
Yeah, it's like drug dealers
have
use
to register.
Yes.
So she's like, it's a burner phone from The Wire.
So parting thoughts. Would you recommend that people watch this? Where does this fall on movies? Anyone?
I think it's watchable for sure.
I don't know. I was really annoyed by it.
I would say there's a good chance I'm going to watch it again because with friends this time because it was a pure delight. And the funniest thing I've heard in months is he's not a cop. He's not a cop. He's not a cop.
Everything will lead you to believe him to be a cop, but he is not a cop.
The whole story, you're like, oh, this is clearly
he's
not a cop.
He's essentially a scientist.
Which is
irrelevant.
Oh, man.
Essentially a scientist.
If you do watch this movie, which I don't know if I recommend, but because it actually opens up this whole world of the second life of Al Pacino, which I think we should get into on this show. Like
he might be our new Nicolas Cage.
Oh my God! There's one thing I did want to point out, which was Jet City Improv.
I was going to say that.
Wait, I didn't see that.
They're having like a scene. Him and the cop are having a scene, and behind them, like perfectly framed, is a flyer for an improv company, like a Seattle improv company.
The whole movie. I can't believe you didn't see it.
That's funny. I didn't see that.
As if the whole movie was a ruse just to plug
because they're in Seattle. At one point, he gets into a car and there's talk radio on, and I was like, please let it be Fraser Crane. I was like begging for it to be like, hello, Seattle. Dr. Fraser Crane here.
I'm listening.
And I just typed in on my computer, Jet City Improv. It is real. Seattle's best comedy show. Seattle short form improv troupe offers all ages shows and classes.
And Al Pacino.
I would like them to call in.
Guys.
I would like them to call in and let us know if they...
I saw these guys in Seattle. I want to advertise them in 88 minutes.
They're great.
Can we get it?
And it's not really even a proper flyer. It seems like it's something that you would make and just pop it up. Yeah,
it's awesome. Can I get a suggestion of a space that would fit on this stage?
well, this is awesome. And thank you so much for joining us. Our sponsor today is actually an Earwolf listener, Christina Klein, or Kime. Christina Kime, thank you so much for donating money. Without you, this place would be a ghost town full of weirdos and losers.
I'm pretty sure it is a ghost town.
Yeah, it is.
I'll give you $100 for your cash.
But thank you, Christina Kime. You are our favorite person ever. For today. So that is 88 minutes.
Do I move the seat up? sorry. Yeah, it was just a good hour.
$100 not for your cab, really.
Let me be clear.
Okay. $100 plus tip.
That's right.
Sit in the back while I investigate.
Yep, I'm gonna drive.
You'll be in a lot of shots. You'll especially
Kim's
be in the shot.
Kim's gonna sit in the passenger seat.
Kim's gonna sit up here. She looks weird. She's suspicious. She carries a gun. And she's been in an abusive relationship.
Please,
and she has a very strange waist area.
And here's the Easter egg
that
moment.
That talks weird.
And here's the Easter egg moment. You have to just watch a completely 80-yard scene, which means they added in the dialogue way after the movie was done of Kim like talking to him, because she's never talking in the car. It's all done over flashback and voiceover. That it's so bad.
I didn't notice that
when they had that whole conversation in the car. She's like, "You need to give me answers. You need to tell me what's going on." She's not saying any of that. They just creatively shoot around her.
They needed to do that, because otherwise it would seem that his monologue about his sister was out of nowhere.
Which it probably was,
They got some studio notes.
Yeah.
And they went back with Ringwald.
Notes.
And then Ringwald, Bizarre Wing Girl. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Pete Holmes.
Thank you, guys.
Anything you would want to plug? Anything, Pete?
Just You Made It Weird, man. Other podcast people enjoy that one. I'm going to have all these people on.
And you are at Pete Holmes at Twitter, right?
Pete Holmes with a Z.
Ooh, oh, yeah. There you go. All right, Pete Holmes with a Z. I'm Paul Scheer at Twitter.
At Miss June Diane.
I'm not on Twitter, guys.
All right, that's the way we do it. See you next time. Bye-bye. Oh, and thank you very much to our engineer, Dustin. Thank you so much for doing it.
Dustin!
Thanks, bye.
$100 for your cab.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio Boom.com. Oh, oh, oh. The wolf dead.